Expat Files with John Mueller, Mondays and Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on the Progressive Radio Network. South
of the border. Hi, everybody. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to the Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you what it's really like to live, work, play, and or retire in Latin America. I tell it just like it is, not the version they give you in those glossy travel magazines or the picture they paint for you in those international traveler websites where they're only trying to sell you something. What's it really like for expats living in Latin America? Well, it's time to take off those rose-colored glasses and find out. So let's get started. I think I'll start off by saying a little something about high fructose corn syrup. Seems like everybody with a brain's been talking about it lately, how it's connected with diabetes and obesity and any number of modern-day first-world ailments. And let me stress first world here, because down here in the third world, if you read the labels, high fructose corn syrup has not hit down here yet, except with prepackaged processed foods imported from the first world, naturally. I know I touched on this a little bit in one of my shows quite a while ago, but I think it's important to go into it now in some detail. You see, if you pick up a bottle or can of any soda down here, you find it has real cane sugar in it, not high fructose corn syrup, like every soda does up in the first world. Now, the very first time I came down to the third world, back in the late 80s, when I still drank Coca-Cola and other crap like that, I noticed that when I did drink a Pepsi or a Coke or whatever, it seemed to be a little more refreshing and a little lighter tasting than the sodas I was used to drinking up in the first world, and with a little less aftertaste, which I could only explain as a less persistent taste on the tongue and back in my throat, like I seem to remember getting with sodas up in the first world. And back then, I never said anything to anyone. I figured it was psychological. I chalked it up to the fact that I was on vacation in a different country, having a great old time, and just being in that glowing vacation state of mind, if you know what I mean. We all get that when we're on vacation. Everything seems a little better. Because we're not in Kansas anymore, Dorothy, and we don't have to go to work tomorrow. Anyway, after a Latin American vacation, when I got back to the United States and had a soda there, it didn't quite taste the same. It took me 10 years to realize, in the mid to late 90s, when I got the healthcare bug and started reading labels, that there was a difference, and the difference was high fructose corn syrup, which in the 70s and 80s, slowly but surely, replaced all the cane sugar formerly used in all the packaged and processed foods up in the States. But still, down here in the third world, they use sugar cane for everything, whereas up north it's high fructose corn syrup. That's because up north, corn is the biggest and cheapest cash crop of all, which makes high fructose corn syrup very cheap to produce, much cheaper than cane sugar, which is only more expensive because it has to be imported. Just check out that documentary, Food Incorporated, and you'll see what I mean. Anyway, no matter how cheap high fructose corn syrup is up in the first world, it's still cheaper to use cane sugar down here in the third world because they grow it and refine it right here. In fact, when you're driving along the countryside, you see vast fields of sugarcane, just like you see vast fields of corn up north. So there's virtually no transportation costs. So for all you expats and expat wannabes who are into nutrition in a big way, and I know a lot of you are, or you wouldn't be listening to PRN and Gary Null. The fact is, down here, at least you won't have to worry about high fructose corn syrup. Unless, of course, when you go to the grocery store, you just have to have those Chips Ahoy or any other packaged or processed food that they bring in from the first world. And though we all know by now that high fructose corn syrup is not at all good for anyone's health, refined cane sugar is not really good for you either. But at least it's proven to be much less of a problem, though it is a problem. But you might be asking yourself, like I did, if there's such a small amount of products with high fructose corn syrup in them down here, why does Latin America have such high levels of obesity and diabetes? Doesn't that kind of disprove the high fructose corn syrup hypothesis? I'm sure most of you realize that Mexico is always in the top 5 in diabetes and obesity, according to World Health Organization statistics. And those two health problems mostly affect the poorer classes who could never afford to buy prepackaged processed food imported from the first world. The kind of stuff that doesn't have cane sugar but is loaded with high fructose corn syrup. So if they rarely eat products with high fructose corn syrup, why the epidemic levels of obesity and diabetes? That doesn't seem to make sense, does it? Well, if you live down here long enough, you can see what the problem is. It's the absolutely terrible eating habits of these people, especially the poorer classes, which makes up 50 to 70% of the population. The truth is, because sugar is so cheap and available down here, cane sugar that is, Latins of all classes are absolutely addicted to it. All you have to do is sit in an outdoor cafe and engage in one of my favorite hobbies, people watching, and you'll see what I mean. The average Latin puts about 3 or 4 spoons of sugar in every cup of coffee. Not to mention, they have a kind of sugar-sweetened bread cookie they call pan dulce at every meal. And they're always serving up some kind of Kool-Aid-like beverage that's got just a hint of some kind of fruit in it. And the rest is just concentrated sugar water. Kind of like oversweetened Kool-Aid or Tang. You go to any Latin's house for breakfast, lunch, or dinner, and they'll have any of a dozen of these sugar water beverages. And the supermarkets are just loaded with aisles and aisles of that stuff. Even though down here the trees and farms are absolutely loaded with fantastic fruits and vegetables. But unfortunately, most of the good, healthy, natural stuff like that ends up getting exported. The problem is the people are addicted to sugar. And one other thing you can't help notice is that little kids are forever sucking on little candies called dulces. And the thing is, when you notice these kids smile, and they're almost always smiling, it's so obvious that many of them have brown and discolored rotting teeth. Something these days you almost never see up in the first world. But it's truly an epidemic down here. Now, when I was a kid going to grade school back in Chicago, I remember there were always one or two kids in class, the poorer kids usually, that had a few little silver caps on their front teeth, obviously because they had rampant tooth decay. And although back then, young kids, including me, had our little cavities in our back teeth, almost none of us had that rampant kind of decay you see down in the third world here in the front teeth, which is very obvious in these kids when they smile. But down here in the third world, it's the same with poor kids and rich kids. By the time they're 5 or 6 or 7 years old, they already have pretty severe dental problems. And it's so common that no one thinks anything of it. And I've never heard anyone except a dentist even mention it. And of course, only the wealthier parents can afford for their kids to have those metal caps on their front teeth. And the rest of the population of kids just get neglected. And the dentists down here that I've talked to say that tooth decay is one huge epidemic. And it's because of all the sugar-laced products and the little cheap candies that the kids suck on all day long. And since 70% of the population can't afford to have their kids' teeth fixed correctly at the dentist, that is, with those aluminum metal caps you see on front baby teeth, which are pretty expensive. Instead, the whole young population of Latin America runs around with massive tooth decay. And personally, I don't get it. Those kids must be in a lot of pain. Or maybe I'm just a big chicken. When I get a cavity and I can feel it, I go running to the dentist right away. So I had to ask a well-known dentist down here, how come all these kids look so happy? They're smiling all the time, eating all this candy, and yet they're just loaded with cavities. How can they not be in continuous pain? And the dentist said it's true that some of these kids have 10, 20, even 30 active cavities in their mouth at one given time. Yet the kids almost never complain and they keep eating sweets. He said the kids learn how to eat the sweets in such a way that they avoid chewing on the side with the most sensitivity and the biggest cavities. Just like we do when we have a bad tooth. They just end up chewing less and eating faster. And no matter how much a kid's teeth might bother him, he'll never turn down free candy. But he said eventually a kid will end up at the dentist because he's in so much pain he can't stand it. And when the dentist gives the parents the bad news on how much it's going to cost to fix those teeth, they usually just end up pulling the worst ones because it's cheaper. Down here, it's not about dental hygiene, it's about the money. And the dentist admitted that he gives the mothers and their kids a lecture on the dangers of sugar, but it goes in one ear and out the other. And when the offending tooth is gone, and the kids don't have pain in their mouths anymore, they go right back to the sugar again. And since 95% or more of the population has never even heard of dental floss, the dentists down here are doing a landmine business. And it's not in anything that you might call high-end dentistry, of course. It's all the basic stuff, filling and drilling and pulling. In fact, there's so little stress on dental hygiene down here, I know you're going to be absolutely surprised to find out that in most Latin American countries, there's no such thing at all as an accredited university-trained dental hygienist. And the word doesn't even exist in Spanish. In fact, you could pick any Latin American country except some of the more first-world-leaning ones, like Costa Rica, Chile, and Argentina, where there's a heavy gringo influence because there are a lot of first-world retirement communities. But even so, maybe only 1 out of 25 dental offices actually has one. And when they do have one on staff, they're catering to embassy people, expats, and first world foreigners. Not the local middle class population at all. Outside of those three countries, Costa Rica, Argentina, and Chile, anywhere else, if you phone up a dentist and ask for an appointment with a hygienist, they won't know what you're talking about. You can get your teeth cleaned all right, but it'll always be by a dentist. And if you know anything at all about first world dentistry, you'll know that dentists do not clean teeth very well at all. In fact, studies have shown that when dentists do it, they're very superficial about it. They personally don't like doing it, they're overtrained for it, and would much rather be doing the real work of mouth restoration, because that's what they're trained for, not the lowly art of teeth cleaning. So down here in Latin America, if you go in to have your teeth cleaned, you're almost guaranteed to be in and out of there in 5 or 10 minutes. Whereas if you go to a hygienist up in the first world, it'll take a half an hour to an hour. And that's not including the bitching she'll give you for not flossing. And a dental hygienist is actually a specialist when it comes to tooth cleaning. She does hundreds and hundreds of those procedures every year. And dentists don't like to admit it right out, but they'd rather be doing something else, like real dentistry that makes them 4 or 5 times the money. Because, well, that's what they're trained for. But back to the sugar bit. I started out this program by saying what a very good thing it is that when it comes to the local food products, they don't have high fructose corn syrup down here. And that only the wealthier folks can afford to load up on it because it's always contained in the more expensive imported products from the first world. Now, just to give you an example about how clueless the people are down here about the harmful effects of any processed sugars, let me ask you first world expats and expat wannabes a question up there. When's the last time you were reading your local newspaper or flipping through a magazine article and you saw that one of the big sugar producers was running an ad telling you how good sugar was for you? Now, you'd think that would be a hard sell, wouldn't you? I mean, can you think of any good reason why sugar's good for you? Personally, to me, it's only got one good thing going for it. That is, it makes things that are bad for you taste good, like coffee and ice cream and cake and soda. In fact, I defy any of you out there to tell me that refined cane sugar or high fructose corn syrup actually helps anyone's well-being. Because knowing what we know today about diabetes and obesity and 1,000 other health problems, sugar might just as well be a controlled substance to be avoided at all costs. Kind of like alcohol and cocaine. Even a little is really no good for you. And that's why you first worlders up there are never going to see ads by G&H or any other big sugar producer extolling the health benefits of sugar, because there just ain't any. But down here in the third world, it's completely different. Sugar companies have the audacity to advertise the wonders of their product in all manners of newspapers and magazines. In fact, every few months or so, big sugar companies run ads that are completely full of BS. And although these kinds of bogus promotions seem absolutely normal to the average Latin guy down here, when an expat comes across an ad like that, we really have to wonder if it's for real or some kind of a sick joke. If an ad like that ran in the first world, it's just certain they'd end up in a lawsuit or two, and they'd probably end up with a lot of picketers protesting outside the main office. But since there are no truth in advertising laws down here in Latin America, if you've got the money to buy an ad, you're in. Like I said, I can't think of a single thing in sugar's favor, except it makes things that are bad for you taste good. But you know, I'm not as smart as these advertising pros, and these guys know just how to motivate and pacify the stupid public. And down here, the public is extremely stupid. And here, more than anywhere else, if it's printed in the paper or it's on TV, they believe it. And I have in front of me right now a half a page sugar ad to prove it. It shows, for one thing, a bunch of smiling school kids and adults standing next to a tall mound of pure, refined cane sugar. And wouldn't you know it, in this ad, the promoters of sugar have found 10 ways that sugar is good for you. And here's what it says, and I'll translate this for you. First, it's a fountain of energy. Second, it makes you alert. Third, it makes everything taste better. Fourth, it increases your endurance. Fifth, it refreshes and satisfies. Sixth, it's ideal for cooking any dish you have in mind. Seventh, it's very low in calories, only 4 calories per gram. And fat, you know, has 9 calories per gram. And by the way, just so you know, if you're not into the metric system, a teaspoon of sugar has 4 grams in it, or 16 calories. Okay, and here's number 8. The cells in your body need sugar to function, especially your brain, which runs on pure sugar. Of course, they don't tell you that your body makes its own sugar when it needs it, and that your body doesn't need any refined sugar at all. And here's number 9 in that ad. Sugar harmonizes perfectly with all other kinds of food, including meats, cheeses, herbs, and spices. And number 10, and this is the killer, folks. Sugar is now being fortified with vitamin A. Well, isn't that wonderful news? And then they go into a big, long paragraph explaining why vitamin A is so important for children, and how down here in Latin America, there are great deficiencies in vitamin A, especially with the poorer, less well-nourished segment of the population. And sugar, of course, loads of sugar, is the cure for all that. Now, if that isn't the biggest con job you have ever heard, and in fact, because sugar companies down here are such huge players, and in more than half the Latin countries, sugar is a top export item, which means it's a top source of foreign revenue, as well as a big-time employer, landowner, and taxpayer, and donator to political campaigns. And in fact, governments are always kissing the ass of the sugar producers, just like the government in the United States kisses the asses of the pharmaceutical industry and the banking industry, among others. So anyway, the big sugar producers, along with government, have come up with a really great way of keeping the wheels of the sugar industry turning by actually legislating the addition of vitamin A into sugar and sugar products. And they're not only proud about that fact, but they advertise it all the time, which has got to be some of the most twisted logic I've ever heard. So when a very low-income, sixth-grade educated mother of a bunch of kids walks down the aisles of the supermarket and sees the words vitamin A fortified on every package of sugar, and she sees those big ads and all that propaganda endorsing the stuff in the big newspapers, she's got to be thinking that this is an excellent thing for her kids. Well, that's the way the average person thinks down here in Latin America, and that's the way it goes. No matter how disgusting and distasteful it might seem to people like us. And speaking of misleading, and in fact sometimes totally false, ads and promotions down here, and right now I'm talking about magazines, newspaper, and television, every month or so, the beer and liquor industries, which are huge enterprises down here in Latin America, especially since alcoholism is practically epidemic in the Latin male population, that is. Anyway, these huge liquor companies, they run full-page ads too, touting the health benefits of beer and hard liquor. And these are ad campaigns that would never be allowed in the first world. Now, before I get into this phenomena, let me explain something about the schizophrenic nature of Latin society. Now, if you ask any doctor, psychologist, or psychiatrist down here, what's the number one family problem in Latin America, they'll tell you it's alcoholism. It's absolutely out of control and has ruined more families than you could ever count. And doctors have told me that every single Latin family has at least one stand-up drunk under its roof, and oftentimes more. So you gotta wonder, if alcoholism is the number one domestic problem, why do they let beer and alcohol companies run huge ads telling you how great it is for your health? And the marketing people who place these ads write and design them like they were some kind of public service announcement endorsed by government and the medical profession. And again, the uneducated public buys it hook, line, and sinker. But at least these days, beer, wine, and alcohol bottles and cans do have a little warning on them, saying, of course, that alcohol could be damaging to your health. And though they do have these warnings, they're not exactly like they are up in the first world. The thing is, these warnings are so small and inconspicuous that you can barely read the letters. And the funny thing is, when you hear an alcohol or cigarette ad on the radio or television, they run the health disclaimer so fast that you can't even understand it. Like Alvin and the Chipmunks Latin style on speed. Well, you might be wondering how product health warning labels even get passed down here, since the alcohol and liquor industry are in bed with the politicians. Well, I got the answer to that question from a guy I know that works at the United Nations. He told me that Latin American countries are forced into it, or else they end up getting some of their healthcare aid cut. These days, Latin American countries have to put warning labels on liquor and cigarettes, or else certain kinds of international loans and healthcare assistance will not be forthcoming from the first world. Like, for example, deep pocket groups like the World Health Organization. And that includes free money and aid from the United Nations, too. So that explains why you do see warning labeling like that down here. The simple fact is, if they don't do it, politicians won't get all that free international money, which puts the brakes on them lining their own pockets and the pockets of their friends and family. They need that donated first world money so they can steal it. It's that simple. In front of me right now, I have one of these unbelievable beer and liquor are good for you ads, and it's written and designed like a pseudo-public service announcement. And let me just translate one little paragraph for you. It says, "We all know the benefits of beer, wine, and liquor for your health. They are very good to take advantage of as part of your everyday menu. Any one of these beverages is more refreshing and satisfies your thirst better than sodas and juices and other drinks. And those who drink non-alcoholic beverages receive only a fraction of these natural health benefits. And it is well known that beer, wine, and liquor combine excellently with all kinds of food." And here's the kicker. I gotta salute the guy who made this one up. Now listen to this. It says, "Many foods that are served are generally acidic, and because of that, tend to ruin and distort the flavor of certain drinks, with the exception of beer, wine, and alcohol, which remain pure, tasteful, and unaffected. Now, when I first started seeing ads like this, I could hardly believe they were serious. But they're everywhere, and the beer, wine, and liquor manufacturers are paying big bucks for these kind of advertisements. And I guess the only saving grace is, though a lot of Latin Americans do read the newspaper, they almost always just read the front page, the sports page, and the entertainment section. And maybe the classifieds. And that's pretty much the same habit the first world people had when they read the newspaper. Back before the internet exploded, that is. When first world people actually did buy newspapers. And since there's no truth in advertising down here, people who want to promote something or a product can say just about anything. Now, there are ways, of course, that that can work to your advantage. Especially if you're an expat looking to start a business down here. Now, pay attention. I've often stated before that Latins love anything and everything that comes out of the first world. Well, this has opened up some big possibilities for some first world promoter types to make some quick big money down here. Because you see, a small but persistent group of first world promoters, both legit and not so legit, are starting to come down and place huge ads in Latin American newspapers, offering various kinds of weekend conferences and seminars down here at some of the big, well-known first world hotels, which makes them seem all the more legitimate, even if they're not quite on the up and up. For example, quick and dirty one-day investment seminars are all the rage down here now, where a bunch of so-called specialists come down from the first world, give you a seminar on commodities, options, or stocks, and they're only really trying to sell you a product on which they get a big commission. And it's generally not much of a good deal at all. But the people who they pitch that seminar to have no idea that it's old rehashed junk that probably will never work down in the third world. And in fact, my own lawyer got sucked into one of those investment deals himself. He paid $200 to hear a self-proclaimed first world expat give a seminar on how to be an expert in the U.S. stock market. Yeah, right. Even though anybody from the first world who knows what's been happening in the market in the last few years would just laugh at such a prospect. When first world specialists who've been in the market for 20 or 30 years are losing their asses, the little guy just doesn't have a chance. No weekend seminar is going to help anyone beat the stock market. Not in this financial climate. You'd be better off going to Vegas. But try telling these starry-eyed Latin guys that. And that's why they're the perfect suckers for these seminars. And why first world guys with a little Spanish and a little moxie are cleaning up. And that's why nearly every single week down here, I read about some guy I've never even heard of offering his little get-rich-quick seminar, charging $200 or $300, handing out a little diploma and promising these starry-eyed Latin guys looking for a first-world shortcut that they're going to clean up in the commodities or the stock market, or they're going to be the next marketing genius. And the thing is, every Latin business guy wants to get a leg up on his competitors, and he knows that almost no one down here in Latin America uses first-world cutting-edge techniques. So these seminars virtually sell themselves. And as usual, the only one making money is the guy putting on the seminar. I've seen it happen 100 times. And what an easy way to make money it is. A first world guy who knows a little Spanish and wants to clean up in the seminar business down here, all he has to do from his place up in Cleveland is to get on the internet and book a hotel conference room in the business district in any one of the big Latin American cities. Just a small conference room that holds 100 people in a Hilton or a Radisson or a Marriott, and then get on the internet and send out some promotional emails to any one of 100 companies down in that area that have enough mid-level management guys that can afford $100 or $200 to go to a seminar like that for a day or two. And then, of course, put a few big ads in the local newspapers a week or two before the seminar, and be sure to say it's an opportunity of a lifetime, a one-time-only event, and that there's very limited seating. And that'll hook them every time. And those ads will show your photo with a big bloated resume on how you're such a huge success at whatever kind of seminar you're giving, whether it's marketing, promotion, stress management, internet sales, stock market, commodities or futures trading, real estate, property management, even timeshare sales. Now that's a big one down here, believe me. Anyway, dozens of these so-called first world experts come down, and of course they know just enough Spanish to be able to pull it off, and they put on a nice PowerPoint show, and they give out a lot of handouts, and it's all first world looking, and it plays right into the psyche of what these Latin first world wannabe businessmen want to hear, with secret tips learned by some specialist that came down from the first world just to share those golden gems with the select few that paid their money. And believe me, to pull this off, a first world guy only needs a nifty seminar title, a big bloated resume, and a good line of BS. In fact, I've talked to more than a few Latin guys who've gone to these seminars and showed me the pamphlets and handouts and the outline of the seminars. and I could tell you with 100% certainty that these transplanted seminars in Spanish are just warmed over business and management seminars that were once all the rage back in the 80s and 90s in the States. The material that they give is the same old 10-minute manager crap that people gobbled up before the financial crisis, before the real estate collapse, and even before the dot-com bubble wiped out a whole sector of the economy, if you can remember that far back. So these guys aren't even offering anything new. What makes all the difference is that it's wrapped in a first-world package. So there's a great opportunity for all you expats and expat wannabes out there. If you have a mediocre lecture or seminar that you want to sell, or even if you have an idea for one, Latin America is absolutely ripe for it. These guys will buy anything first world, even if it's warmed over management crap served on a 20-year-old plate. But you might be asking, since Latin America is mostly people who make around $300 a month, who can actually afford to go to one of these imported first world seminars? Well, you have to remember that all the big transnationals are down here, and they've got huge numbers of middle managers, Latin guys with very mediocre business degrees that never stepped foot in the first world, who are just ripe for that kind of thing. Not to mention local companies that are quite big, like cement, sugar, power, coffee, and real estate companies that have large numbers of middle management people too. And often big local companies like that will send their managers to local seminars that look interesting, rather than send them off by plane to a big city seminar somewhere else and spend all that money on travel expenses. And just who are these so-called experts giving these seminars? Well, actually, sometimes you do get a bona fide expert, but not often. Just like down here, you get rehashed has-been rock bands like Air Supply, you get rehashed has-been business gurus down here too. But any first world guy can come down here, call himself an expert, and give a seminar. When your picture appears in an ad and you're promoting a seminar, no one ever recognizes the name of the face. They just see that you're some kind of first world expert with a track record. And of course, the guy giving the seminar writes his own copy and his own bio. So who knows how much BS he actually padded onto his resume? For all you know, he might have gone bankrupt two or three times and committed securities fraud. So I'm saying now that first world business types that know a little Spanish have found a way to come down here and make some quick money. And of course, not all of them are con artists. But 90% of the time is just a damn good show for Latin first world wannabes. And after they get their little diploma and are certified experts in housing, marketing, commodities, or stocks, you can bet that little diploma will be in its place of honor in their little cubicle. And though you and me know it's just as likely to be repackaged, warmed over first world drivel, they'll brag about it for weeks.
South of the border, down Mexico way.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. And don't forget you can email me on anything at all about Latin America. TheExpatFiles@gmail.com. That's TheExpatFiles@gmail.com. See you next time. Nos vemos.
South of the border.